it ended before besieged Palestinians could even really catch a breath. Less than 2 hours into a 72-hour UN-brokered truce in Gaza, it collapsed. As Israel is reported to have once again broken an agreed-upon pause in fighting, an Israeli soldier has been captured by the Palestinian resistance. The question remains then that in the face of these continuous failures to respect ceasefires and the capture of this Israeli trooper, where do we go from here? In this edition of the debate, we'll not only ask the who and why of these ceasefire breakdowns, but we'll also discuss the need for a more sustainable and permanent solution to the macro Israel-Palestine issue.
A 72-hour truce, which came into effect on Friday morning to allow Palestinians treat the injured and bury those killed, only lasted less than 2 hours before Israel called it off. The Israeli military has blamed resistance groups in the Gaza Strip of breaking the truce by attacking and killing two of its soldiers in southern Gaza and capturing another. The Israeli army says it will take strong action against the move, adding that intelligence efforts are underway to track down the trooper.
There have been three attempts at a so-called humanitarian ceasefire, and each one of these attempts, it was Israel that violated the ceasefire. And if we look at the details of these alleged ceasefires, Israel has declared that 44% of Gaza, 44% of Gaza is not within these ceasefires. So again, it's a very problematic term. And if we recognize that it is the right of an occupied people to defend themselves, as is enshrined in United Nations resolutions and in international law, then we do have to recognize that the Palestinian resistance does have the right, not only for self-defense, but the right to capture soldiers that invade and occupy its territory, exactly as the Israeli army has done.
But Hamas's deputy leader, Musa Abu Marzouk, says the operation was conducted before the ceasefire started. The movement says the Israeli army unilaterally violated the truce by shelling a shopping mall in Rafah, leaving dozens of people dead and scores of others injured. Hamas spokesman has also rejected the one-sided story by Israel.
Israeli media is claiming that two soldiers have been killed and one has disappeared. This narrative is one-sided. The Israeli enemy is the one that breached the truce when Israeli special forces entered the eastern side of Rafah. The Palestinian resistance clashed with them, and this was our right to defend ourselves.
Before the 72-hour truce came into effect, Israel said it would not accept any ceasefire, adding it plans to keep its troops in Gaza while calling up 16,000 additional reservists. Israel's staunchest ally, the U.S., was quick to condemn Hamas for what it called a barbaric attack to kidnap an Israeli soldier. This while the troopers were killed and captured on Gaza soil, which under laws of war is not considered a violation.
The White House spokesperson and others in the White House should review their English language and review their usage. Number one, they called it a kidnapping. And we need to recognize that the Israeli army is an invading army, an occupying army, so it cannot be called a kidnapping, it is called a capture. And if we're going to refer to it as barbarous, then we really need to look at the language. The barbarous action that has been happening, the really criminal action, is fully at the responsibility of the Israeli government and the Israeli army that has been supported funding-wise and diplomatically by the United States. And I find it quite ironic that on one hand, President Obama says, and I quote, that he's deeply concerned, gravely concerned about the loss of civilian life. And at the same time, they continue to fund the Israeli war machine. So it's an odd way of being concerned about the loss of life.
Washington, which considers itself a leading defender of human rights, only spoke out and criticized Israel's ongoing onslaught on the 24th day of the deadly war. Even that came after the UN slammed Israel for a third deadly attack on an UNRWA school where internally displaced Gazans had taken refuge. Over 3 weeks of Israeli airstrikes and tank shelling have claimed a large number of Palestinian lives, mostly civilians. But those who are now bearing the brunt of the war are Gazans who have survived. Those injured have been left without proper medication due to seriously low medical supplies. Food and water shortages and power cuts have added to the misery of the 1.8 million Gaza residents. No other window of opportunity remains open for Gazans as they live under a seven-year crippling Israeli siege.
Thanks again for joining us for this edition of The Debate. Let's now introduce our guests for this half hour. From The Answer Coalition, we're joined by Mr. Brian Becker, who is joining us live now from Washington. And we're also joined by former U.S. intelligence officer Bob Ayers, who is joining us from London. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us here on The Debate. Now, Mr. Ayers, I want to start with you, if I may. From the get-go, you know, the U.N. said that this was meant to be an unconditional ceasefire, but John Kerry said that Israel would still target tunnels. Now, does that added fine print not defy the logic of any unconditional ceasefire, as Hamas too had pointed out?
Well, I think that the concept of an unconditional ceasefire depends very much on the ability to control all of the forces of both parties that are on the ground. Israel's statement that they're going to continue to blow up tunnels does not really constitute a threat to Hamas militants or Hamas combatants. So in a way, it's a qualified ceasefire. It's not an unconditional ceasefire. And that's exactly the way Israel decided they were going to behave, and that was fairly clear from the beginning.
Mr. Becker, I wanted to get your opinion on that, too. How do you feel about this talk of an unconditional ceasefire, yet Israel wanting the right to attack these tunnels?
The U.S. government, led by John Kerry as the chief diplomat here, has tried to carry out the impossible task of appearing to be a mediator or an entity that's trying to position itself between the two sides and come up with a peaceful solution, a truce, or a ceasefire, and at the same time write a blank check to the Israelis as they carry out merciless attacks against predominantly civilian targets. And U.S. government, even in the last days, was rushing missiles and bombs and bullets to the Israeli Defense Forces so that they could be resupplied, even at the very moment that the Obama administration was issuing its first, and I would say very tepid, criticism of the Israeli attacks against civilians. Kerry's position is really an impossible one because it's based on doublespeak. You can't have a ceasefire and allow the Israelis to continue to carry out operations against the tunnels within Gaza, a country that has become an area that has become an outdoor prison. And the people have no access to anything. They have no control over their own borders or their own airspace or their own waterways. And the tunnels, in fact, would be the only access out because of Israeli policy for the past 7 years. You can't have a ceasefire and say everything is frozen and at the same time say to the Israeli military, but go ahead and continue some operations. A ceasefire would be a ceasefire. And I think the whole thing was a publicity stunt, allowing the U.S. government to try to position itself as a mediator at the same time as it's the indispensable nation for Israeli aggression. And let's not forget that if the United States were to take a decisive action, if it were to say we are cutting the $4 billion in aid that we give Israel every year, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, if they were to do that, that would be of a decisive significance in the Israeli calculations. But that's what the U.S. government will not do.
Mr. Ayers, I wanted to get your opinion on that. Mr. Becker, they're saying this is a publicity stunt on the part of the United States. What do you say to that?
Well, I think we need to step back a little bit and see what's been going on. There have been a series of ceasefires proclaimed and then violated, and either side blames the other for violation of the ceasefire. This is nothing more than a continuation of this long series of ceasefires. The real question is, what is going to be the long-term outcome of this current conflict? Will Israel succeed in negating the Hamas military threat? They may temporarily blunt it, but they'll never negate it. Will Hamas be defeated? No. You may defeat the soldiers in the field, but you won't defeat the idea that motivates Hamas. So what we have happening now is Israel trying to destroy as much of the Hamas infrastructure as they possibly can, so as to buy themselves some time and some respite from today to future military Hamas operations. We don't see a solution to anything. The problem is not going to go away. This is simply a way of rebalancing the military position on both sides.
I'm glad you mentioned that issue of solutions, Mr. Ayers. Mr. Becker, I want to put a question to you similar to that then. What exactly do you believe were the Israeli goals in this aggression in Gaza? Because, you know, many theories were put forth, such as the Palestinian Unity Government and others, of course, and trying to, you know, completely disarm the resistance. And secondly, do you believe that Israel will succeed in those goals?
Israel wanted to crush the unity government. They were taken somewhat by surprise by it, as was the United States. Hamas seemed to signify by its decision to form a unity government with the Palestinian Authority, and the formula being such that Hamas would have almost no position of authority within the new unity government. In other words, Hamas was willing to make very big concessions on the basis of giving up governmental authority in exchange for the unity agreement. Even that became the trigger for the Israeli response. So then why do they fear that? They fear that if the Palestinian people, in spite of the fractured state of political affairs, are able to have some sort of unity and become a center of galvanizing or a magnet for international support, then the Israelis would be facing a new consequence. The Israeli project, even though it seems omnipotent militarily, even though it's the superpower militarily, even though it has American patron support and is in some ways an extension of American power, the Israelis know, the Zionist government knows, that the project is actually a fragile one, that a big part of the population are first and second generation immigrants, that if things were to go badly for Israel, many of them could go back to Brooklyn or back to Europe or go somewhere else, and that the whole situation could change. And if the United States government was ever to see Israel as a